When, of a sudden, the $10 restaurant burger became a $20 burger, the battle for burger customers across the land became very intense. This leads us to ask, what is today's recipe for restaurant survival?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,396th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Topeka who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, as we all know all too well, the cost of food has gone through the roof. That $10 restaurant burger we all knew and loved is now the $20 burger that gives us cause to pause. As a consequence, fewer of us are eating fewer restaurant burgers, and fewer burger customers means that fewer burger dollars for the nation's burger restaurants. To win those customers who could still afford the $20 burgers, restaurateurs must use every means possible, from sourcing the best burgers and buns for the least cost to luring burger customers away from the competition. Each step the restaurateur takes to win the never-ending fight for burger dollars is governed by information. Those restaurateurs who have the information and know how to use it have the best chance of winning the burger dollars and staying in business. This leads us to ask, what is today's recipe for restaurateur survival? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have Bob Virgatis. Did I get that right?
Yes, Michael, you did. Thank
okay,
you.
Virgatis. And who is the chief visionary officer for pointofsale.cloud? I've always wanted to be a visionary officer, so you could tell us, what the heck is a visionary officer, Bob?
Yeah, thanks for having me on your show, Michael. So a vision officer, I think, you know, when people build businesses, they all want to be like the president or the CEO or something like that, right? But the job of the leader is to create a vision, and then people will get attracted to that vision, hopefully, and then execute it, right? So when I set up this company, I thought I didn't want to be an executive or anything. I just wanted to be able to tell my story, explain a vision, and then see who joins. And I think that, you know, that's a good description for what I like to do.
And it's a good way of doing it, too, because if you have a vision and people can understand the vision and see where it might take them, then you can get people to join with you. If you don't have that vision, it's hard to follow along that. Well, one of the visions I never had was to own a restaurant. And I think it had something to do with having a job as a dishwasher when I was a kid. And that job did not last very long. But what about you? You're well steeped in the industry. You probably know half the people involved. So have you ever dreamed about having your own restaurant?
Yes, absolutely. I was born in Athens, Greece. So I think it's in the blood, you know, we're the DNA makes us cook and feed others, right? I remember going to my aunt's houses or to relatives, and you would not only eat there, but live with food to take home. I've always had a natural inclination towards food and feeding others. And technology is one of the ways I found how to do it. So I'm really excited to be in this industry.
Good. And there it is. And there's information technology is being infused in every industry these days. Recently did a show with a fellow who has a software program that can help people manage their soil anywhere in the United States. There's that much information being disseminated now. And of course, if you can use that information, you have an upper hand on the competition for the consumer dollars. Tell us a little bit about your information service, pointofsale.cloud. What exactly is that?
Yeah, a good question. Thanks, Michael. So as you said, information is everywhere. And what I'm seeing is that restaurants and many businesses that traditionally have not been information businesses, they don't really know how to take advantage of it, right? And as a result, I think we've seen some very large corporations come in and, you know, use that as to elbow out restaurants in some way. And my vision was that was to make technology easy and democratize it and then get out of the way and give it to the customers. Don't use technology as a toll gate where every time somebody goes to a restaurant, we make a dollar, but make technology that restaurants can deploy as if it was their own and let them capitalize on that and build their own business around it. And I wasn't seeing that kind of business model that, you know, out there. So my goal was to bring that to restaurants. It's point of sale geared because that's how restaurants interact with their customers. You know, as you said, it's like, you know, spending a dollar or $10 to buy a burger. That happens through a point of sale terminal, right? So trying to help customers in, help our customers in restaurants reach their customers either on-premise or online or through mobile in an easy-to-use platform that's cost-effective for them and allows even the smaller players to look to their customers as convenient as the larger players. And that kind of thing doesn't quite exist out there, so I thought I would invent it.
And that's one of the wonderful things about information technology is that it allows for greater access to mm-hmm. information for everybody, it's in essence. Yeah. And you can certainly see that in the radio business, whereas mm-hmm. before you used to have permission from the federal government and a license to have a radio station, not so much anymore. And mm-hmm. so it's a really liberating kind of technology to be able to use this information as we go along. Let's take a quick look at what happened to the restaurant industry when that $10 burger became a $20 burger, because it seemed to me like it happened very quickly.
If you look at right after COVID, I think where it started, right? Like I think two big factors took place at the same time. One is labor costs became more expensive. And the second thing is food costs became expensive. So a restaurant is basically has, if you look at their revenue, it breaks down to three buckets. One bucket is food cost, one bucket is labor cost, and one bucket is all the other costs from which you're going to eke a profit. And typically a restaurant, you know, even a successful one, would get 10 to 15% profit if they're lucky, right? So normally they're like, one third of my cost is going to be labor, one third is going to be food, one third is everything else, and from that I'm going to get a small profit out of it. Well, now that your labor cost has become 40% and your food cost has become 40 or 45, that other third has become smaller, which make it harder for them to exist, let alone pull a profit out of it. So, and that happened really quickly, as you said, in the past couple of years.
And it was very quickly when everybody decided, wow, I really like going out for a burger. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure I can go out as often as I did before.
Exactly.
So did that have a big impact on the restaurant industry as a whole throughout the United States?
It did. And we've seen closures of some really large chains even because of that. It has really reshaped the industry. And everyone is feeling it. And I know from our clients in the industry, they're all hoping that it will end soon. But in reality, you know, it will take a while. This is not something that will go away as quickly as it came on.
So it's not going to shake out as quickly as everybody hoped.
It's not. Restaurants have to learn how to live with it, actually. They have to change their business model to live in this new world. And there are opportunities. So as much as we're saying, hey, it's too expensive, we're going to cut down our occasions, I also see the flip side of this, which is it's too expensive, I have to have it. So if restaurants learn how to switch from the, I have too many customers, and they can do that, Michael. I'll give you an example. I was in Las Vegas with my family, and I have two teenage boys. I was there with my wife, and one of my 18-year-old said, hey, you have to go to this donut place and get me a donut to bring home. So we took an Uber ride from our hotel. We spent $35 to go to this donut place, right? We bought three donuts, each one of them for $14 a donut, and then $35 going back to the hotel. So over $100, right, for that occasion, because we had to do it, because it, it's a TikTok sensation, because they've reached the right client. So there is another way that restaurants can compete in this new environment. And until things become a little bit more normal. So there is hope. They just have to do business differently.
There it is. It just is what it is, and that's all that it is. We have to cope with what it is. And information is the way to do that. So your point of sale software program is really a direct link to your customers, to the restaurant's company. Whether the restaurant is very big and has thousands and thousands of people or a smaller restaurant as well.
Yeah, that's the way, a restaurant nowadays is basically two things. There's a kitchen and there's a way to take money and service customers where they place their order, right? Everything else is now optional. You don't need to have tables and chairs if you don't want to. Your customers can come up and pick up their food, or it can be delivered to them, right? So you always need some way to get money. So that's where the point of sale comes in, and you have a kitchen. But you have to also be able to run your, you have to find your customers across multiple channels. They may be online, they may be mobile, they might be up to third parties. You now have more ways that you can meet that customer outside of just the front door, like the old days.
And information is the key.
Exactly. Information is not only how your customers know about you, information is also how you get to know about them and how you can adjust in this new landscape.
Which restaurant chains are really cooking these days? Because we go through cycles of what's hot and what's not, from fast casual to fast food to and so on. What is working best today?
What's working best today is restaurants that focus on experiences. Something where I go and I feel special, where it's an event, even if it's me getting a cup of coffee or I have a donut. So anything around novelty, Michael, is what I'm saying. Like we're seeing chains like Crumble, for example, that sell cookies, right? A $4 or $5 cookie, and they will have a line out of the door. We see $14 donuts. We see interesting burgers. We see new pizzas. So people are really looking for novelty. And going back to information, if you look at this next generation, you look at the Gen Z, right, out there in the field, and the millennials, they're getting a lot of their information through TikTok and
Right.
short videos, right? So anything that is photogenic does very, very well. Another big thing I'm seeing is anything that has integrity. People are now well-educated consumers. So if they're going to have a $20 burger, they want the best $20 burger they can find. They want to know where the meat came from,
Okay.
where the buns got baked. They want to be brought into the experience. So those are the places that are doing the best. And it doesn't matter if they're fast food, fast casuals, or higher end dining. What I'm seeing is that consumers are willing to spend more happily as long as you give them more. And part of giving them more, it's also the experience. They're not just
Experience, yeah.
looking for protein.
You
They're looking
know,
for a song and a dance.
Bob, that's something I would like to pick up right after this coming break.
Sure.
So do stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We are with Bob Vergidis, who is the Chief Visionary Officer of PointOfSale.cloud. He's the one that really helps restaurants connect with their customers, which is a very big deal when customers are so hard to come by. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back and we are talking about the restaurant industry and what it takes. What is the recipe, today's recipe, for surviving in the restaurant business? When, after the $10 hamburger we all know and love became the $20 hamburger that gives us all cause to pause? I guess we were talking about experience as being part of the new recipe, or probably always was a part of the recipe, but very important part now, because if we're going to go out and have a $20 hamburger, we really do want to enjoy the experience. And so when you brought that up, Bob, I think of a comparison between McDonald's and In-N-Out. I don't know if you have In-N-Outs out there, but out here in California, we have these.
Unfortunately, we don't.
We have these In-N-Out hamburgers that are often situated on the same off-ramp as a McDonald's. And whenever you stop by the restaurant and you have your choice, you see a long line of cars waiting to get into the In-N-Out and no line of cars waiting to get into the McDonald's. And I often think about that in terms of being the poor franchisee of the McDonald's or Burger King or whatever they are, because they're, when you go to the In-N-Out, it's always a pleasant experience. The staff that waits on you always smiles, and it's a genuine smile. I always wondered what they feed them to make them smile that way. But it's always a warm, friendly smile. The food is always the same. And it's always, you know, attractive. It's just burger and fries and milkshakes and Coke. But that's it. That's all they try to do. But they do it really well. So it's that experience and, of course, the food quality. But the experience of having somebody smile when you place an order, even if you are driving through, they're smiling at you. Works the same everywhere, doesn't it?
Sure it does, Michael. And In-N-Out, it's exactly the example that you just provided, and the contrast between an In-N-Out drive-through lane. Even at I've been at 11 o'clock at an In-N-Out, and it looks like a concert just let out, right? And you can compare that to the McDonald's next door. That's a masterclass of what restaurants can learn to do better in this economy. The reason In-N-Out works is because, number one, quality matters. In-N-Out has no microwaves in their kitchen. All the food is freshly made and it's never frozen. And customers can tell the difference. So that's number one. Second is, if In-N-Out has economic pressures, they never dilute the recipe. They never buy cheaper buns. They never buy cheaper meat. They keep the quality constant. The second thing that In-N-Out does well that other restaurants can learn from is the have it your way ethos. Although In-N-Out has a very simple menu, I remember the first time I went to an In-N-Out and I was like, is this just burgers and fries? Like, how simple is that? The more I learned about In-N-Out, though, is that you can customize each one of those things infinitely. For example, I like my fries well done. And so I asked, you know, can I get them well done? And they said, yes, not only can you get them well done, you can get them light well done, or extra well done. So they allow the customer to customize those few well-chosen ingredients to their liking, and they can have it their way. The third part of their magic is how they treat their team members. As you said, it looks like they're feeding them something to make them happy. They pay them really well. They treat them with respect. They train them a lot. And they're proud to provide this service, because that restaurant knows that the way to get more customers, to get customer loyalty, is to first get team member loyalty. If your team members are excited to work for you and they're loyal, they're going to pass that feeling to the customers. In-N-Out is still a family-run business. And I think that's a great thing for independent restaurant owners that are looking at the landscape and they're like, you know, how do we survive? If you're not, you know, a publicly traded company, you have a lot of control where you can say, you know what, this year we're going to have less profit, but we will build a better quality product. We don't have to be all things to all people because we're not looking after short-term trends, right? We're not looking at the next quarter like McDonald's is looking at. We're looking at next year. We're looking at building a legacy. So I think smaller restaurant operators can lean into that and operate in a way that allows them to build a better product for the consumer. And the product will always choose that over an inferior product. The next thing a restaurant should do, even the smaller ones, is make it easier for customers to do business with them. Where McDonald's does really well is they have multiple easy channels to receive orders. They have kiosks, they have an app that works really well. They're very convenient, right? And In-N-Out doesn't have an app. They don't have a web that you can order from. All of their orders are coming in person to person every day. Well, many restaurants can take the best of both worlds. So build a great quality restaurant, add great technology to it to make it frictionless for your customers to do business with, and then you can thrive. And I think that's the great opportunity for new restaurant owners today.
Another thing you brought up earlier was the fact that customers want to know they're getting the best possible food. And one of the things I've seen the ownership of In-N-Out do is present the possibility that they're actually changing some of the things on their menu to get rid of the bad things that have been held up by Robert Kennedy Jr. saying, hey, we got to get rid of this stuff. I think that In-N-Out was the first company that I saw actually responding to that in a very public sort of way. So.
Yeah, they're a phenomenal organization. I think I was going to go on a campaign for a while to get them a Michelin star. I think that In-N-Out deserves a Michelin star because they're an affordable chain. Everyone can go there. They've done a great job keeping their prices down, and they've never compromised on quality and service. And it takes a lot of bravery to be able to do that. And they're being rewarded handsomely by the consumers. Another great chain is Chick-fil-A. Similar to In-N-Out, great product, great team member attitude, and again, customers with their business. Sometimes we look for complex answers to simple problems, and sometimes they're simple answers. Do a good thing, set a fair price, and consumers will choose it. Just be patient.
When with your software, it would seem to be one of its greatest features is that it would allow the restaurateur to know exactly what the tastes are of its customer base, correct?
In real time, and also to allow their consumers to experiment. So, if you're going to reach your customer now, both on premise and online, you should have the exact same ability for them to customize, either in person or remotely, right? They should be able to have it their way, regardless of where they are. So, one of the things we focus on is making sure the guest experience is the same in person as it is online. And this way, as I said before, a smaller chain can represent themselves very powerfully, just as well as a larger chain, right? And therefore have the informational advantage. At the same time, they can have the product and the service advantage. That's our goal, is to help the little guy play the information game as well as the big guy.
Well, that's something I noticed because it seems like whenever I go out to like even a family-owned business now, the wait staff has a handheld computer, and
Yes.
it makes it very easy for them to customize orders to taste that way. So.
Absolutely. And that helps them collect data that they can use to then find out what the trends are. So if you find that people are always taking the tomatoes off and they're adding, something else into the mix, then you start to understand, hey, maybe I have a new product here. Maybe I have to sell it in a different way. And I saw that with some of my clients. The more they let their customers customize, the more they can co-create with the customer. And therefore, they can be on top of new trends as they're being developing. How powerful is that, right? Like real time, your customer is working with you in the kitchen, so to speak, to help you create your next, great offering.
Right now, there's a bill in Congress to eliminate tax on tips. I have a sneaking suspicion that becoming a wait person is going to become a very popular way of making some money.
Yes, that's indeed. I hear about that all the time. So I look forward to see, what happens next. But certainly, the industry is seeing this as an advantage, and it would help bring more people to restaurants, perhaps even lower some of the labor costs if the tips are tax-free.
Which do you think is the easiest kind of restaurant to work on? If you were going to start a restaurant chain right now, what would you look to do? What would be your favorite kind of restaurant chain to start?
I think today the ones that do well are things that are built around treats. Like we're seeing cookies, we're seeing cupcakes. I think there is there is an opportunity out there for anything that is treat, so to speak, oriented. That trend is doing very well. I think quick service restaurants without the big dining room, I think there is a market for niches. Find something like I was in a restaurant in New York that had a phenomenal breakfast. It was only open between 7 a.m. and 3 a.m. It had a very simple but very well executed menu, and then it closed the doors. So I would say, back to your point, don't try to be all things to all people. Pick one thing and execute it really unapologetically well. And let the word get out there, and you will find that you will have more clients than you can accommodate. No one goes to Google and Googles what is the second best restaurant in New York. No one does that, right? So everyone searches for what is the best Mexican restaurant place for breakfast. Be that. So find a niche market that you're already predisposed to be good at, something you enjoy and you're passionate about. Bring that passion to that and then share it with the world. So be on TikTok, be on Instagram, reach your consumers, get out there, tell your story, and that segment will find you. I see that over and over and over again. It's inspiring when it happens and it works well.
Well, on your website, which is pointofsale.cloud, you have a lot of features that are directed to the restaurant industry. It's kind of like a challenge. One of them that caught my attention is that inflation could turn McDonald's into a serious competitor of Starbucks. How would that work?
Absolutely. Yes. So if you imagine Starbucks coffee now being a $5, $6, $7 item, right? It opens the door for somebody like McDonald's to come in and say, you know what, we'll offer the same coffee at $3.50 or at $4.75, $2 or $3 below that point. And the technology now in the coffee space exists where McDonald's can produce a coffee that is 80% as good as Starbucks. It may be 100% as good as Starbucks, right? So why wouldn't you choose the slightly cheaper option when it comes to a drive-through that's already established? So McDonald's has a great channel for customers to engage with a restaurant. It's very easy for them to add a product from another space and market it for a few dollars less to their consumer.
Sure. So Starbucks being the classic example,
Exactly.
the real difference is not so much the quality of the coffee, I suspect, but the quality of the Starbucks experience being, a nice place to hang out with your friends. And that's probably why a lot of people go to McDonald's or to Starbucks as opposed to McDonald's, but then you have to pay for that ambiance.
Exactly. And that's a great point. I was thinking about that with a friend of mine in Chicago last week, and we're like, why are people going to Starbucks? Is it the coffee? What is it? And you hit the nail on the head, Michael. It's the experience.
Yeah, it's a place to meet your friends and maybe even meet new friends. Whereas McDonald's, it's a run in, grab your coffee, and run out, and it's just the coffee. Is not the
Yeah.
experience so much, yeah.
And if that's all you need, a coffee in the morning, and it's a couple of dollars less, and it's a little bit faster, why wouldn't you choose McDonald's? So it's a great example of competition in that space.
And then there's the $5 meal deal, which is obviously a threat to In-N-Out, because wow, I can get a hamburger for meal for $5 at McDonald's, so why not go there for a quick meal? Well, you
Quality.
quality, yeah.
The quality is going to drive you over. There's no comparison. And you look at parents. I think another thing that restaurants underestimate is that when a restaurant has been around for a long time, enough to pass from one generation to the next, right? We pass food trends to our kids the same way we've done it for the past 5,000 years. Like the way mom and dad eats is the way the kids will eat. Like we pass these examples on. So once people grow up and become parents and they have to choose between McDonald's and In-N-Out, they will feel more comfortable with it with an In-N-Out experience, which then gets imprinted on the kids to continue. Chick-fil-A is the same way. Chick-fil-A does an amazing job because they serve only chicken, very limited menu, right? But it's chicken that you can imagine it being real chicken. It is real chicken. It's not, it's not processed heavily. So parents feel comfortable doing that, and then the kids will follow that trend as well. So quality always wins, by far, even above price, if you structure it correctly.
Yeah, and something so important as food and children, absolutely. Well, we're going into a world, a new world in which information technology not only provides the opportunity to know more about your customer, know more about your food costs and so on, but that information technology is going to start running automation, which means we're looking at a brave new world in which there might not be any people in the restaurant. So we're going to pick that up when we come back from this break. This is the Food Chain Radio program. We're talking about restaurants, and we're looking for the restaurant recipe that will allow restaurants to survive and prosper in today's market, in which that $10 burger became a $20 burger. And we're all looking at our wallets and going, I want the best possible experience for the money I do spend. And if I don't get it, I'll just stay home and eat here. So do stay tuned. We will be right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freeze. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream, and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are talking food, which is what we do on the Food Chain radio show and podcast. And of course, so many of us now live for restaurant meals, because cooking at home takes a lot of time. And you can go to a restaurant and sit down with your family and friends and enjoy having somebody else take care of you. And boy, if you can wire that down, if you can make it a good experience, a pleasurable experience, then people will, if we have good food, people will be the path to your door. And so that's what we're looking for, that recipe. How do we go about doing that? Well, given the costs of labor these days, Bob Virgidis, we're thinking that automation is going to be part of the restaurant future, as it is in agriculture, as it is in everything. Labor is expensive. And so what are we looking forward to in terms of how restaurants can be automated? Starts with information, I guess, right?
Uh-oh. Yeah, it starts in the kitchen, Michael. I think we will see two trends. I think we will see automation in the kitchen, and we will also see automation in the front of the house. So in the kitchen, for example, today we have robots that will make pizza. We have robots that will make burgers. We have robots that will make French fries and chicken wings. We have robots that will make Chinese food. We have robots that will fill cups of soft drinks. We can do all of this stuff today. And restaurants are starting to experiment with that. We will also see automation on the front end, where we will see automated cashiers that run around like little robots, and they take orders from customers. And, you know, we're not that far away from that being a reality in many of the places that we go to.
Artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. I was in Chicago last week at the National Restaurant Association show, and I saw a robot that uses vision to see onions cooking and being able to detect when they are done to the right degree before adding another ingredient. So, you know, they're using machine vision. They're able to detect the environment around them. They're able to do some things that, frankly, takes a lot of training for people to do. And you had mentioned, you know, is the goal to replace people? I don't think the goal is to replace people. I think if you do that, it's going to be a mistake. Customers don't want to go to an automated cafeteria that looks like a dystopian dream of some sort. People are going to restaurants to connect with other people, and they want people in the kitchen to oversee and do the tasks that are meaningful, right? Like if you're making French fries, a robot can make French fries. There isn't the magic to that, right? So if you have labor in the kitchen, put that labor into doing something meaningful, right? Especially if that labor is costing you $15 and $20 and $30, an hour. Make that labor help you grow your business. Don't hide them in the kitchen. You can pass that work to, it's the same way we don't wash our own clothes by hands anymore. We give them a washing machine. It frees up time to do the things that are meaningful.
And when it gets right down to it, if artificial intelligence takes over, we have to find somebody who can use the artificial intelligence to make things work too. So
absolutely,
kind of replaces one kind of labor with another kind of labor. And you see
100%.
That, yeah, you see that in pretty much all of the of industries. Agriculture is the same way. You know, we'd love to find ways to pick the ripe strawberry with a machine rather than a person, but it just hasn't been done, because it just takes that sensitivity about what is ripe and what is not quite ripe, and the degree of ripeness that you need, and so on and so on and so on. So that's, I think, really why we want to see a person involved in the kitchen, somebody in there. You want to, and that's probably why so many restaurants now feature the kitchen as part of their experience, right? So you could see.
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, the restaurant should bring the kitchen. You know, there's a of advice that can help restaurants is bring the restaurant kitchen into the restaurant. Build your restaurant around that heart, around that kitchen, and allow people to see the show. And if that show includes some robots, people are open to that. If that, you know, see people actually make their food. Trust is a big thing, especially for food, right? Because we consume it, it can make us sick. We have to trust where the food is coming from. The more you can show the magic being created to the guests, the more trust you will develop. The more trust you will develop, you know, the more people will come to your restaurant. You talked about In-N-Out. You can look into the In-N-Out kitchen. You can see exactly how everything is made, right? It's not a mystery. And that goes a long way.
You could see the person peeling the potatoes or making yes. French fries with
Absolutely.
Real potatoes. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and that builds the trust. It's a real, it didn't come from a bag. It came from an actual real potato. I mean, that's mind-blowing, right? So,
yeah.
So in a way, when we look at technology and information and AI, we have to think about, you almost have to go back to the beginning. We have to go to 2,000 years ago. I come from Greece. When we go to a restaurant, the owner comes over, pulls a chair, and talks to you. They talk about sports. They talk about the day, about what's good to eat. And they build this connection. The owner is not in the kitchen fighting the fryer, right? So as we're bringing automation in, we should take team members and do what Disney does, which is they're not just the person sweeping the street, right, at Disneyland. They're a cast member. So now you have cast members in restaurants. So I will say, don't just take your labor away. Make your labor mingle and interact and create the experiences that create the connection that tomorrow when I get hungry, I go, I'm going to go back to that place because I like the people there.
You know, my wife features herself a great restaurant critic and is because she's worked in a lot of restaurants. And one of her pet peeves is when she walks into a restaurant, they sit her down or sit us down, and then you have to wait for 10 minutes for something to happen. She maintains that's a huge loss of revenue for the restaurant owner, and that whoever's waiting the table or whoever's taking you to the table, the hostess, as it were, should ask, can I get you something right now? And then relay that in.
Absolutely.
so that ka-ching, 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 the restaurant's making money and the guest is being served instead of this great gap in service. You know, another thing that has struck me is the diminishment in quality when the $10 burger became a $20 burger. It just seemed like some restaurants started cutting corners with the quality of their foods. I resented that. I stopped going.
Again, it goes back to the way... Exactly. You cannot mess with the quality of the food because that's the primary reason for a restaurant's existence, right? And it's too easy when you're in the business to go, you know what, my food costs are high. I'm going to try to lower them down to what I would like them to be. And I'm going to do that by changing suppliers or getting a different product. What restaurants have to realize is that this is the reason customers are coming to you. They're coming for what they know, for the quality they expect. If you mess with that, they will not come. And it's not like there aren't other restaurants that can take your place. It's very easy to replace one restaurant for another once the quality goes down. That's your competitive advantage. You absolutely cannot mess with that. The advice I would give them is take your $20 burger to a $30 burger and make the best $30 burger in town. That's going to... So a lot of times we're not thinking like forward. We're thinking how to go backwards, but it's like go with a wave, you know, go with what people want, which is great quality. So maybe I'll come only once a week or once a month, but I'm going to have an experience that will guarantee I'll come back the next month. And then a whole bunch of hundreds of other thousands of people will think the exact same way, and you're going to be busy.
You have to hold that quality or find a new customer base, one of the two. And which is the least expensive thing to do, hold what you have or find something new.
Yeah, hold every time, right?
Yeah.
What I tell my customers is, if you're building a restaurant, sometimes they come to me and they say, Bob, we're looking at information technology and point of sale systems and all the cool things you were doing as a way to help our restaurant. And what I tell them is like, unless you build a restaurant that is open 3 hours a day, right? And it has, you're accepting only cash and you have a line out of the door, you don't have an information problem, you have a food problem. So go solve that first. Once you solve that, then I can help you manage all of these customers and all of the demand that you have and optimize all of that. But you first have to have a reason for people to show up in the door.
Let's look into the future here, if we can. The $10 burger became a $20 burger, and we all know that the $20 burger is going to become a $40 burger, and the $20 an hour wait staff is going to become a $40 an hour wait staff. What do you see in the future?
I see automation as being the answer to that. So, as we said before, food costs make up a third of a restaurant's expenses. Labor cost becomes the other third. If you're not willing to compromise food costs, as you shouldn't, you should keep your food costs, you should keep your food quality high. Labor is the only other place that you can play, right? So you will see automation entering restaurants. And then you will see prices, being used. Automation will be used as a way to stabilize price a little bit. So we will see more of that, taking place in the future.
It seems to me like becoming a restaurateur is one of the last best places for the entrepreneurial spirit to go.
Yeah, it's been what, 8,000 years of civilization that we've had. We having a restaurant might be the oldest business in the planet, literally, right? And it's built on something that sustains us, nourishes us. A restaurant will never go away. In some ways, it's recession-proof. Even during COVID, people had to eat. What restaurants have to do is optimize. They have to cut out the middleman wherever it's possible. They have to try to ensure that the value of their product reaches their guest at the lowest cost possible. The other nice thing with restaurants is that it's almost like art. There is an infinite way to make food. Some of my clients are pizzerias, and if I ask 100 of them how you make your dough, they all use the same four or five ingredients. You use flour and yeast and water and thyme, and yet each one of those pizzas is unique. So there's just so many variables. It's such a great way of expressing yourself. It's bottomless. It's a really great business, and it helps communities. It helps build, cities, and it helps nourish the people. So it's a super valuable business to be in.
What do you think is the most important ingredient in making a good restaurateur?
Passion, right? It has to be passion. It has to be love. I think anyone that's serious about building a restaurant today, they have to do it because they love it. Love has to come first. And then everything else, will follow. People will find you. If you like what you're doing, if you put attention to the product, if you value the art, customers will come to you. And I see that over and over and over for places where you're like, why would anyone drive an hour and a half to stand in line to buy something from a grumpy person that has been awake since 4 o'clock in the morning to make it? And that love and passion, translates in every bite that you take.
That's what you see. You see
Yeah.
where somebody is passionate about what they do, the passion it translates. Sometimes
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a Chinese restaurant that existed here in town, and people just loved the restaurateur, and his
Yeah.
food wasn't that good, but they loved him. And so they're willing to stand in line for his food. And
Yeah.
I stood in line once and I thought, I'm missing something here. And I guess I just missed the
The
passion of the restaurateur and didn't know
story,
him.
yeah. Yeah, don't cut corners. I think that's my advice to anyone planning to open a restaurant or maybe navigating these difficult times we have now. It's don't cut corners. If anything, use this opportunity now to show people that you can create things that stand out, tell your story. reach out. And you know, people are waiting for those authentic stories that they can connect with, right? Especially in the world of artificial intelligence, all this stuff, human connections are going to become more valuable than ever. Lean into that, even if it's difficult, it will pay off in the long term.
Well, we have a minute left. Final thought. The most important thing, don't cut corners, be passionate.
Don't cut corners, be passionate, build a following with constraints. Learn to love constraints, right? Learn to love that people are looking for better and do better. See that as a challenge to express yourself in a better way, and the future will be bright.
And remember, smile a lot, right?
Absolutely. Greet people with a smile. That's why people are coming to a restaurant. They're trying to escape their lives, right? Give them a reason to smile, nourish them, and build fans.
I remember when I first moved to Santa Cruz, California, and I went to a restaurant, a family-owned restaurant, and Gilda was standing there, and she said, "I'm so happy that you came to our restaurant tonight." And I went back for years and years and years and years and years just because of that. Bob Vergidis, I'll get that right. Bob Vergidis, Chief Visionary Officer of pointofsale.cloud, a great resource for all restaurateurs and people interested in eating good food at restaurants. Bob, thank you so much for joining us. And remember out there, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.